Yes, we are.
The blue light is on. It's time to start. Good morning. This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means on June the 8th, Monday. We're about a month out from being done, I think.
3 weeks.
And so today we have public hearing on 860 and 3166, but we're going to start with the work session, right? Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, before you today is another grant from the Oregon Department of Education. Mr. Reeder is here. I'll ask him to come forward and present this. But this is basically a $2.9 million federal grant. And it is they will partner with the American Institutes for Research. Most of the money will flow to the institution. A little bit will be retained by the department for their responsibilities. And I'll let Mr. Reeder explain the grant request.
Good morning, Brian.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Monroe and members of the committee. Brian Reeder with the Oregon Department of Education's Research Office. We're very excited about this possibility. As you may know, the Institutes of Education Science have a series of grants available where they're looking for joint projects between academia and state departments of education. This is an opportunity for us to partner with the Institute of American Research, AIR. Where we will be evaluating Oregon's educator evaluation system. The intent is to look at the effectiveness, mobility, and distribution of the teacher workforce and what the impact of Oregon's evaluation system is on that and how it ultimately affects student achievement. As Doug mentioned, the budget for this, the grant being sought, is $2.9 million over 4 years. The department's share of that is on the order of $700,000 to fund both a project manager, some administrative expenses, a principal investigator, and also some research office activities around providing both data that we already have at the department that will be needed for the study, plus some analytical capability for the study. So we would ask that you you approve this. This is a way to leverage some outside researchers to evaluate a system in Oregon. One thing that we are trying to do more and more of is when we have new programs in Oregon is to do evaluations of them that are independent, and this is a chance to do that with some outside researchers.
And Mr. Reeder, will there be any state match?
Co-Chairs Monroe and Comp, no. No state money is required for this. This is all federal money.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Reeder? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian, my usual question, maintenance of effort in the future, is this going to be a one-time shot and do an evaluation on current and near future practices, or will this be an ongoing thing the department's going to have to come back in and support down the road?
Co-Chairs Monroe and Comp, Representative Huffman, this is a grant. It is 4 or 5 years, so it's not ongoing, but it is sort of medium term. Maintenance of effort typically refers to state money that needs to be maintained in light of receiving federal money. There's no state money here. Clearly, we want to have the ability to evaluate programs on an ongoing basis, but this makes no requirement on us to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, and so as I look through the grant, it's basically doing surveys of new teachers and trying to figure out what programs and what service, what works and what doesn't work with regard to future teaching and training of new teachers. The question I would have is that you're taking $168,000 a year basically for the department, but is the department also the one that's going to make the analysis on the surveys that come back? Somebody's got to collate and put that information together, and if that's not the department, who's doing that? Or is that separate from department money? The department money is basically the running of the program. This other part would be done by department people, but it's the grant's objective that's being done.
Co-chairs Monroe and Comp, Senator Roblin, the heavy-duty analysis will be done by staff at the American Institutes of Research.
Okay.
That is the piece that the U.S. Department of Education is trying to leverage, is having academic researchers cooperating or partnering with state departments. So our piece is primarily in a supportive role, doing some analysis, but primarily providing them as a supplement to the survey data, the demographic data, the student level data that we maintain at the department, as well as some analytical assistance that they may need on Oregon-based factors that we're more familiar with than they are.
Follow up.
So they're going to basically design the instrument that they're going to evaluate with. They'll send it out. They'll take all those costs. They'll take it back, evaluate it, and that's where the most of the $2.6 million is going. Am I understanding that right?
Co-chairs Monroe and Comp, Senator Roblin, that's correct.
Okay. Additional questions for Mr. Reeder? Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It's not really a question. It's just that I'd like to make a comment. I could wait for the motion, but we have been investing heavily in effective teacher practices in the past couple of biennium, $30 million, up to $30 million in some of our budgets, and I think the timeliness is very, very appropriate, and so that we can see the impact of those funds and particularly have AIS doing the objective outside look is going to be very, very helpful for future committees like this one.
Okay. Anything additional for Mr. Reeder? Okay, Mr. Wilson, what's the appropriate motion?
Appropriate motion would be to approve the submission of a federal grant application to USDOE in the amount of $2.9 million for a five-year grant for evaluation of education effectiveness.
Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that we, what's the first word? Recommend?
Approve.
Man, it's Monday. Approve the recommendation from the Department of Education for an application of teacher effectiveness grant in the amount up to $2.9 million.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? And who would like to carry this? Madam Co-Chair?
I'd love to. It's something I've been working on along with Senator Roblin for a long time.
Madam Co-Chair, we'll carry this to full Ways and Means, and that's all we need. Because
yep.
It's a grant. We don't need Senate and House. Thank you, Mr. Reeder.
Thank you.
And with that, I will open a public hearing.
Mr. Co-Chair, I want to recognize somebody in the audience.
Carlisle?
Yeah, before he leaves.
You know that old guy, too?
So you're going to recognize a Marshfield graduate?
Madam Co-Chair.
I would like to just acknowledge and thank Jim Carlisle. He's been working at the department here for the last couple of years, but prior to that, he was one of my professors, one of my mentors, and he's the teacher that introduced me to Linda Darling Hammond and some other great researchers, and I hear he's thinking about retiring again. I don't know, Jim, how many times has this been?
Eight or nine.
But
Madam Co-Chair, he used to be my boss at Tigard High School, too.
Oh, and okay. Yes, Senator?
Most of my mentors at Marshfield High School were classmates of his at Marshfield High School. And actually, he was the best man, and they were best man. And so I've known people who have known him and his sister who had kids that went to Marshfield for a long time. So a good pirate. I'm really proud of you for recognizing that.
Thank you.
Jim, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for all your work. We won't embarrass you any further.
With that, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 860 and House Bill 3166. And Senator Edwards, Oh, he's here. Senator Edwards, welcome.
Mr. Chair, would you like a summary?
Yeah, let's have a little summary, okay. And then we'll hear from Chris.
Okay, co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 860 comes to you from the Senate Committee on Education with a due pass recommendation. The bill has an estimated fiscal impact of $285,000 related to FTE reimbursement to the university system. It also requires the HEC to submit a progress report for the pilot program during the 2017 regular legislative session.
Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm state senator from Eugene. And I appreciate you hearing Senate Bill 860 this morning. I'll give you a brief background about how we came up with the concept for the bill. So I was talking with a high school friend of mine who is in has a company that provides various course content and CRM software services to different universities. And his company had been contacted by, I believe it was Syracuse University, to provide a customer relations management, database type solution between their alumni association and the university and undergrad students, and helping to connect alumni with undergrads. And it turned out to be a success, and they had a lot of really positive results from this. And so he got to thinking, well, why don't more universities really work to connect their alumni with their undergrads? And so he just wanted to do this like on a volunteer basis. And so he put a post on LinkedIn, and it was on the alumni page of the university of which he is an alumni himself. Here in Oregon, that university shall remain nameless at this point. But it was one of our more major universities. We'll just put it that way. And he said, "Hey, any of you other alumni out there want to start working with me on being mentors for undergrads at our alma mater?" And he had hundreds of responses within a couple of days. Enough responses that the Alumni Association of said university contacted him and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, it just seems like this would make a lot of sense," and et cetera, et cetera. And they said, "Well, we don't really, that's not really what the Alumni Association is about. And, this is more about raising money for the university." Which I personally believe is short-sighted. I think when you get alumni invested in the success of undergraduate students, whether it's while they're still in school and then transitioning into their post-studies career, I think that's really how you get people more invested in the university, alumni more invested in the university. So we started talking about it, and he did a little bit of research and was calling around to professors and career advisors and academic advisors, and he had already talked with the Alumni Association in his alma mater, and everybody kind of said, "Well, we don't really..." The professors said, "That's not our, career advisement and helping people transition, helping students transition from their university experience into a career afterward, and then career advisement, in the early years. That's not really our role." And the career advisors were saying, they kind of touch bases with us oftentimes as they're kind of heading out the door, and it's a little bit late. And we have services that we can provide, and then the academic advisors were saying, we do academic advising about a field of study, but we don't really connect that with specific employers, and it certainly doesn't. There's not that thread between the academic advising and those first years out of college. And when you look at the rising levels of student debt, I mean, I just believe that it's in our public interest to do everything we can to help students get off to a good start and kind of hit the ground running. So the idea is to create a pilot program, the bill is written so that it would be one of the big universities and one of the regional universities would each be eligible, and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission would put out an RFP, and universities that are interested in doing one of the pilot programs would put their proposals up, and the funding is in the bill. It's meant for one FTE per participating university, and that FTE would be in charge of building just one, full-time, 100% focused on building a program to connect alumni with undergrads and in mentorship opportunities, undergrads and even recent grads. So that's the concept. And when I talked with Ben Cannon at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, it sounded like that this was in alignment with some of the stuff that they're focusing on. And so I commend the bill to you, and hopefully we can move this forward.
Okay. Questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I love the idea, frankly, so much so that I do this with my alma mater, which is a private school, Corbin University, and mentor a student, and so this is great stuff. As I look at this, the question that kept coming through my mind is, why do we need a program for this? Why do we need a bill to cause this? Is it because, you talked a little bit about it, is it because universities are saying they don't have the capacity to do this? Because I work with a professor in a particular area, I work with the provost, and I work with the alumni director, or let me say they call me and ask for stuff. And that's good because that's their job. So why do we need this? Is it only about the funding?
Good question. Mr. Chair, Representative Springer, that is a good question. And I think when we started the bill, it was about generating interest in something that seemed to be there, but nobody seemed to be on point on. And it was also about, frankly, trying to rattle some cages in a couple of alumni associations. Since then, I've had a lot of people come to me and say, well, actually, we're actually interested in this. Particularly, I think that there's funding attached, and that is one of the main pieces of it, is to dedicate the funding to a person who is on point for making those connections. Because it is not necessarily the mission, or at least they don't believe it's the mission of the Alumni Association to do this stuff. And they, and alumni associations have an interesting relationship with the university. And so it's not necessarily their mission. And if you go outside of the alumni, but they're the ones with the contacts, if you go outside of the alumni association and you get into the university, like I said before, professors don't really see it to be their role. Academic advising doesn't really see it to be their role. And career advising, it could be kind of their role, but they're not really making the connections between the alumni and the undergrad. So it's kind of one of those situations where university leadership could say, well, we're just going to do this, but nobody has yet, at least to my knowledge, really used the alumni associations and those lists, so to speak, to get these type of programs going.
Follow up
a statement and a question, Mr. Chair. This is a pretty naive statement. What happened to being excited about your alma mater? I mean, that to me is just very fundamental here, and that isn't just about the dollars. That's the success of where the dollars are being spent. And then I see a blank. What are you thinking dollar-wise here?
I think it was, is it still blank?
I think it was 285. I'm looking at the engrossed bill.
Yeah.
There should be, that we sent it down without, I think they put 285 in the.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. 285,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not million.
And follow up.
That's right.
Go ahead.
And so 285,000 biennium, so you're thinking two positions?
The idea would be
two colleges?
The idea that it would be, that's a biennial number.
Right.
So that divided by two would be your annual, the cost for one FTE annually.
Thank you.
Times two universities.
Mm-hmm. One big, one small. Senator Rowland.
So one of the issues that we've had throughout higher ed, we just got a report back on community colleges, is graduation rates. And I don't know if your friend has any statistics at Syracuse or wherever it was, if it improved that. To me, it would be a clear connection to increasing it. We've spent a lot of money on Aspire, trying to help kids make that connection to the college, and then we drop them off at the end of college without that. So to me, it makes sense. I think the cost is relatively minor. I would hope that eventually, if this proves out, that we could move it to community colleges in their certificate and other programs. Because if you're going to complete your education in the community college, it would be good to have that same thing. And I know that they do that a little bit more in some of the vocational courses because they'll have a connected industry that's right with them, and there oftentimes that connection is really close. But mm-hmm. for a lot of people at the community college level, they may have only planning to get an associate degree. It would be nice to have that at some point, depending on how this works out. And so do we know if there's been a graduation connection between the two with respect to kids finishing their program because they got the information they needed about doing it? Or is it too early?
I don't have that information, and I will seek it. I'll find out if I can get some information from, I believe it was Syracuse that was.
Okay. Yeah, because it just makes sense to me that if I knew I had a job or if I had a mentor that right. was going to help me look for one, that I would complete my program more likely than not. And if I could get every student matched up with a person, it would be pretty amazing.
Yeah, I agree, Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin. I believe that if it was really a really successful program, that would be one of the outcomes. Another outcome would be, it would just simply be higher early career success, which we don't measure.
Right.
You know, which is just one of those things. I mean, we don't have, that's not one of the things that we measure, but certainly matters as it relates to student debt.
Right. I think the other thing that would happen is that, especially if you did it early in their career, they might talk to somebody and find out this is not where I want to go. I mean, that person, the mentoring may encourage them to find the right match as opposed to, it sounded good, look like I could make a lot of money, and then you find out what you have to do, and you say, well, it's not worth that to me. So having that found out before you graduate is oftentimes really helpful.
Certainly is. My days as a as a master teacher, I occasionally had student teachers, candidates that somebody should have told them that's not the right line of work for them.
Yeah.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you for being here, Senator. Question, maybe not so quick with an answer. Okay, let's move forward the calendar for 2 years. And let's say from the RFP, Portland State gets this person on board and starts working on this. Okay, the Oregonian headlines. Okay, employment increases for students. They're not, you know, they have help for their paying for their debt. But you know, OSU and U of O haven't done anything. So how are we going to counter the wonderful coverage that we get from our newspapers.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, I think that, I guess the way that I see it is that, one, there's going to be two programs, one for the regionals, one for the bigs. Secondly, if it's a successful program, then the others are going to be, I would hope, feel more compelled to move forward with a similar program. I don't know. I mean, I in terms of the media aspect and the optics of the bill. I mean, I think it's a positive thing myself. But should other universities choose not to avail themselves, I mean, this would not be the first issue that has raised the eyebrows of Oregonians. When decisions were made or were not made in the best interest of.
Go ahead.
That's my concern over this, is that, and some of us do well driving up and down the road and serving more than one constituency or one university, but as a beginning pilot program, I struggle with how this is going to help the whole. When we're looking at our goals, I always look through the equity lens, and this is a great idea. I totally agree with Representative Springer. I know that, well, once I talked to my advisor and I said, I was thinking about getting an interdisciplinary degree. And he looked at me and goes, not very many people do that. Are you sure? because you do have your advisors. You do have your advisors on campus. So I just want to make it clear that this is another $285,000. It doesn't seem like a lot, but right now we have people wanting $30 million for early learning. We have another group that wants $45 million for CTE, and so the request list is getting long. But I appreciate your initiative.
Representative Smith Warner, and then Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator, for bringing this. It is a really interesting idea, and my question, actually, I was checking to see if it was what Co-Chair Kampf was asking.
Going.
Well, because I think I have on a similar vein. I was thinking about, so say we do this, and it's a pilot in 2 years, so what does success look like? I guess, so what were your thoughts about, is the idea that we have some sort of an uptick in placement or whatever it is, and so is the goal for this thing to make itself obsolete from the state because the universities see the value in it and they invest, whether it's through their alumni association or whatever, or internally, or would success be it's working and so then in 2 years we do it at all of the seven, just and not with any preconceived. I'm just curious to know what you kind of see success looking like for this.
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that success looks, well, first of all, I mean, at the end of one biennium, I mean, you know, it would take a while to, put out the RFP for a university to be selected, for somebody to be hired and then start working on it. So by the end of a biennium, I mean, I would hope that they're well underway in getting the program stood up, but I would not expect that we would see this massive surge in graduation rates or job placement post graduation. I mean, I just don't think that that's realistic within that short of a time frame. I would hope that there's a report back to the legislature with, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's the framework of the program. Here's how many alumni are involved. Here are how many connections we have between alumni and undergrads. And we think that this is a great thing. I hope, and in fact, I would just say that if there has to be a way for the state to not have to be involved in this, with a direct allocation a direct appropriation for something like this biennium after biennium. I mean, if it really makes sense, if it's successful, then the universities will benefit greatly from it, and then they'll just do it. Sometimes it takes legislative effort to get ideas off the ground, and so that's why we've brought this forward. From the equity standpoint, instead of rolling it out to each university all at once and having it cost many times over what it does this time, it seemed to make sense to just run it to one of the bigs, one of the regionals, and then see what happens, and then go from there. And the other universities will either jump on board and see the value in it, or they won't. And we will have some sort of report back as a legislative body to be able to see, okay, is this an idea worthy of continuing to push on our universities or not.
So. Senator Roblin.
So my feeling when this was heard in the House and in the Senate Education Committee and we had conversations was that newspaper article would come out. And it would say, you know, outstanding results happening at these two universities. It's amazing. And next year, the alumni associations and all these other schools have decided to invest in this program, make it their own. And through the investment of that, we have a number of companies and others who have found the benefit of having connected earlier are now giving money to the alumni association to fund this program. I actually believe if it proves out and if people see the advantage of it with kids that are more engaged in their subject matter in college because they have talked to somebody who is doing it and works out the way it should, you will see other people step up to start paying for it because it has advantages to all of them. If it doesn't in that period of time, we'd be funding something that obviously isn't doing anything. We probably would want to get out. I appreciate the pilot prospect of it because I think it gives the impetus, and once something works for somebody, everybody wants to get on it, and then they start looking at where they can fund it. But until you see it happen, you don't know that it exists, and you don't do it. So for those reasons, I think that this one would self-fund over time. And if it's really successful, most colleges are going to want to do it. And I would say that many of the private schools already do some of this stuff, and the publics need to get on board and start recognizing that they have an obligation to their students past the date where they get their diploma.
Yeah, that's a better prospect than what we often face where we have a task force and we know that down the road there'll be huge ramp-up costs.
Right.
So you're saying not necessarily with this. Probably not, because we just hope to stimulate and excite people to do it on an individual university level, or you know, alumni associations or sugar daddies or whatever. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Coming.
Thank you.
You bet. Appreciate you coming, taking time from your exciting revenue committee. Anybody else that wanted to be heard on Senate Bill 3 or Senate Bill 860 or House Bill 3166? Anybody else?
Well,
yes.
So are we going to open up a public hearing on 3166? And because I've got some things on that, and I know that OSBA.
I think you already did.
Oh, did you open both?
I opened a public hearing on 860 and 3166. So
I would love to talk about 3166.
Well,
do you want me to go down there?
We're going to do that next.
Okay, cool.
I just wondered if there was any of the folks out here waiting to be heard.
Do you like a summary?
LFO is going to give us a wonderful summary of 3166.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3166 comes to you from the House Committee on Education with a due pass recommendation. The bill requires the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to administer a pilot program for the purpose of identifying non-core courses and alternative authorization requirements. It requires the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to submit a preliminary report on September 15, 2018, and a final report no later than September 15, 2020, We're still working on some of the fiscal impacts of this bill. We believe the impact to the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission is minimal because they already have a licensure that will fit the parameters of this bill and staff that can support the writing of the reports. We're just trying to figure out what's an appropriate salary for these positions that we should be allocating. So that is where we stand on 3166.
Questions? Okay.
So
we are not in work session on these bills yet. We haven't yet been given the authority, but I'm assuming that'll happen.
So on 3166, its cost is based on some people?
Yes. So
how many positions does it
take?
We also have the school districts here that can come up and talk a little bit more about it.
Okay.
But the bill, I believe it's up to three schools that it allows to reimburse for the teaching of these non-core courses.
Okay, Representative
Mr. Chair,
Springer.
I don't know if you want me to go down here. I've been working on this bill a lot, and actually I love this bill. So would you like me to testify on it?
Sure. Representative Springer is going to elucidate us on 3166.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Springer, State Representative of House District 17. I'm from SIO. And so 3166 is just, frankly, it's not a bill in my district. I suppose maybe someday it could be, but that's not where it emanates from. But this is great policy that I jumped on board with. It makes sense. This came from originally Baker School District. Mm-hmm. And we have him on the phone, or what's going on there?
Mr. Chair, Lori Satins before the Oregon School Boards. The superintendent is sitting by his phone in case you wanted to ask him questions. Mm-hmm. I know we've had this bill. It got rescheduled. And the superintendent was here, and I met with, I believe, every one of you nearly about the bill so we could kind of get the basis of how this program works and what they're trying to achieve with the Baker Technical Institute. And he's available by phone.
Yeah.
I can do the best I can with some of the technical aspects of the bill after the representative.
And we'll do that. I kind of felt sorry he drove all the way from Baker when he thought the bill was going to be heard, and then we canceled out that day. What was it, last Wednesday, I think? And so having him on the phone will be wonderful, and we'll do that as soon as we finish with Representative Springer.
Okay, thank you. So this bill talks about, and I'll have him talk about how it applies in Baker, but this is about getting practitioners into CTE programs. And there's just lots of either misunderstanding or confusion about getting that license from TSPC. I don't understand exactly where that comes from, but what we are looking at is one solution for up to three districts that has been created by one district to get practitioners into the classroom to impact kids. They have over 100 kids that want to do this, and they're trying to fill the need. So one of the things that I really liked about this bill was the oversight committee from the community that authorizes this. And frankly, this is just another layer of oversight at the local level and more people engaged, and I like this. Frankly, I was one who asked for an amendment, and it happened very easily, and I appreciate that. It was originally a committee of five members in that industry in the community, and I said, you know, let's get some district folks on board that actually know how these things are implemented, how these things are regulated, the connections with TSPC and different organizations. So it has added to that at least one administrator and one district board member. And I think it's important for the board members to have that piece here since they are the ultimate governing authority in the district. This is for smaller districts. 3,500 or less. That tends to be, not always, remote districts that just have a hard time filling the need to meet the needs of all of their students. And this session, we've talked a lot about the equity lens, and I appreciate that conversation a lot, and I appreciate how it focuses on these students also. And this helps us get to that need. It's a pilot program, so if it doesn't work, it goes away. And if it does work, then we figure out even a better way, if necessary, to make this happen. So I know that Walt's going to talk about specifics in his district, and I think Lori has a great perspective on how districts implement this, but certainly I'll answer any questions that you may have.
Senator Roblin.
So either one of you can answer it, but the committee, before you put the other people on it, sounded exactly like a Perkins committee. Mm-hmm. So Carl Perkins allows you to get extra money from the federal government for doing just these things. And we in our district have had numerous teachers certified through that program and through TSPC to do our television program, to do our radio program, to do our metals program, to do our building trades program, we have gone through that process, and we wanted to go through the Perkins process because we wanted that money along with others. This one basically makes a state Perkins program because you can get special money if for it. I would hope that we wouldn't leave the Perkins money on the table at the federal level by doing our own thing and then setting up programs. It is an arduous task with Perkins. Sometimes it takes a while to get all the pieces together, and that can be a little frustrating, and I can see that for small districts. So when I looked at this, I liked the idea because it let you get into it without having to do as much work as you might have to otherwise. Well, I knew the certificates were always there.
We do it for culinary arts
and a couple others in some other districts. So there have been a whole lot of ways to use the current certification. And I didn't understand why people said it was that big a problem, but I can understand in these smaller school districts where getting together the team alone would be a difficult task. Finding people in the field you wanted to have in your deal would be a problem. So I'd love to hear from the teacher, but are we putting at risk the Perkins money for these districts, or are we going to do something to get that too?
Mr. Co-Chair, again, Lori Satinspiel for the Oregon School Boards. I don't think so, and Walt would be a better answer to that question. Specifically, because real briefly, I don't know if you're going to call him or not.
No, we're calling him right now.
Okay.
No.
We're not calling him right now.
I need to bring the equipment up.
Oh. So I can tell you just a little bit about, I think, sort of the fiscal implications that we've been talking about. It is something that the district has budgeted for. This is important to the community. They've got a brownfield, their house restoration, culinary arts, ag programs, construction stations, so students can get a sense of from plumbing to sheetrocking, and they want to bring in the industry folks to help with those teachings. Last year they had 120 kids, and this year they've already have 300 out of the 480 signed up to do something within this program. So it's been budgeted for in their general fund budget. They also were a part of the CTE Revitalization Grant Program, and they're continuing to look for grants that they write for as well, and they were part of the one last time in the last budget cycle. And the region got $487,000, which was put between several projects and several school districts. So that's how they are looking to fund this. Again, it's community, and it's a priority for the board, and they'll be funding it through their general fund budget. Personal services contract is how they want to deal with industry, so they want to be able to call them the teacher, and they can be in front of the class. And again, in the report, we're looking at measuring engagement of students, if this touched the graduation rates. How do these teachers, industry teachers, do they keep coming back? Are they still engaged? And sort of that's some of the measurements that they'll be looking for in the pilot.
Okay. And if I may, Mr. Co-Chair.
Professor Springer, we're going to have to recess, I guess, for 10 minutes to get.
They need to bring in the equipment, and then we'll set it
okay.
up.
Mm-hmm. Equipment's coming? Okay.
Came in the door.
All right.
Okay.
And Representative Springer.
And then Senator Roblin. When I chaired a school board and sat on that board for 5 years, leaving Perkins money on the table was never a conversation.
I would hope not.
So it, our conversations and my idea, my philosophy looking at Perkins money and those kinds of programs are, what can we do with Perkins? We have this left over, this this need left over, and how do we, now that we've exhausted Perkins dollars, also do more for our students? And that was really the paradigm that I found myself personally in, and I think probably most board members would say that also.
I would agree.
Okay. Now, am I going to have to recess? What do you want me to do?
Along the funding lines, Mr. Chair, I wanted to note that on page 2 of House Bill 3166, line 23, the bill does allow for some of the funding for the purposes of the bill to be funded through the network of quality teaching and learning. And I would note on OLIS, there is a dash A4 LFO recommended amendment. What that does, it has a lot of changes in it, but the LFO portion for our requested amendment, on line 15, it includes reimbursements to school districts from the NQTL for the purposes of this bill for funding. And then there's some other changes that are included in that amendment, but those are all LC related changes as related to the OEIB sunset. So those are going to, you're going to see other bills with this statute and they will include those same changes. But the portion of the amendment that we requested is the line 15 as far as allowing funding for schools to be reimbursed for the NQTL. So.
Okay. And why don't we recess and let them hook up the information so we can.
Someone on the line.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. This is Senator Rod Monroe. Is Mr. Wagoner?
This is Mr. Wagoner.
We're getting feedback. How do you deal with that?
We need to redial.
All right. I had feedback.
Okay. Welcome to the Subcommittee on Education for Ways and Means. And we wanted to hear from you on House Bill 3166. We've been discussing it with Representative Springer, and LFO has given us a little background as well. So we'd love to have your comments.
Well, I very much appreciate the opportunity. My name is Walt Wagner. I am the superintendent of Baker 5J. And, you know, I guess the basic idea for us is we have a program in Baker Technical Institute that our board has really made a priority. We got the revitalization grant and got that launched. And we have several neighbors that we hope to work with on that and so on. But last year we had about 120 kids sign up, and this year we have about 300 out of a high school of 480. So we feel like the program is going forward very, very well. And but we have a need for people like diesel mechanics and welders, roofers, plumbers, culinary arts, although we have a culinary teacher that's second to none in our opinion, electricians and such. They have special skills. They're community members. We have a plan that allows us to have rigorous oversight, and the law has been appropriately and effectively amended so that not only do we have 5 citizen members, but we also will have a board member and we'll have an administrator. We have a plan for evaluating these people and making sure that students are successful. So we have effective oversight of skill set. Good people are good teachers with good skills. I mean, these are people that are coaching Little League and have these special skills. We'll bring it and be able to bring them on board as a teacher and give them the authority of a teacher. We are kind of an island in the desert, so you know, our nearest neighbor is Le Grand, and they're 44 miles away. It's an interesting commute. And then we have farther neighbors, like Ontario, that's 70 miles away. So it's important for us to be able to take resources in our community and use them to expand programs. We asked if this could be and accept completely the idea that we will pilot this and see how it works. We personally have no fiscal concerns. We've worked on that, and we are working on non-core teachers, and we want to be able to develop a cadre of people that can handle special issues. So I would entertain any questions outside of that.
So, Walt, you have people that have a college degree, but not a degree in education, but who have a lifetime skill, perhaps several years, in a particular area, and you certify them to teach the CTE courses at your high school. Is that about the way it works?
We actually have, we do have some that have a college degree, and we give them oversight so that they can come in, let's say child development. So you have a doctor, a pediatrician, and this individual with 12 years of college and 15 years experience in the field, and we still have to stand over them. Now, I imagine you could probably go through a process with TSPC, because Vicki has assured me that we can. It's just that that also includes 3 more years of college and some other things as far as we can tell. We also have individuals in the community that maybe were 8th grade dropouts. They're also high quality members of our community, and quite honestly, they're not going to get any college no matter how hard we work. But if we have great oversight, and if they have great skills, and if they have wonderful relationships with students and can teach, then we want to be able to give them the authority of a teacher and not have to babysit them. It's the babysitting that costs us a lot of money. We need to have people of high character and high skill set that can, under appropriate supervision, be allowed to act as teachers because they have the skill set.
Okay. Do you have people that you schedule to teach under those circumstances, but when you watch them in the classroom, it becomes apparent very early on that although they may be an outstanding plumber, they're a lousy teacher?
Yeah, and you know, and we're well aware of that. And if that occurs, I mean, the oversight, the supervision, and the expectation is that they haven't gone through student teaching. They haven't gone through pedagogic instruction. They haven't gone through methods and modeling. There's a lot of things they haven't experienced. In that case, then, you know, if they're prone towards inappropriate behavior, we're prone towards immediate resignation to the fact they have a skill set, they're not going to be effective teachers. And we build right into the system that the minute there's a problem, they're operation. And as I read the law, and you know, our intent with the law is if they don't align, they're simply dropped.
Okay. Senator Roblin has a question.
Yeah, I have a couple. The first one is that many of these people are only teaching one or two classes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's our intent. Is, you know, we're thinking 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week for some of these people. Depends on the student sign up.
And number two, are you developing along the lines of the Perkins plan, a Perkins credential they can have by the end of the semester or the end of the 4 years career, so they've got a number of courses, so that you could actually get the Perkins money?
Yeah. The Perkins money comes, you know, in ag sciences and some of those kinds of things, and we're certainly working on making sure that out of BTI, students can get certificates of accomplishment that have to do with a 3-year program of personal development, so that when the kid steps out the door, they have a certificate that says they've completed the necessary requirements, and that aligns us with what's going on. Unfortunately, over the years, the Perkins money has sort of shrunk.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah, we know that one badly.
Okay, additional questions? Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Walt, I announced on the floor last Friday I'm a feminist, so I'll confess to you too. But I was wondering about gender equity in these programs. What's your ratio?
I actually can't tell you what the ratio is. I can tell you a few things. Culinary arts is actually filled with young ladies. Our health studies is almost completely girls or young ladies. We have phlebotomy and CNA, which is certified nurse assistant. You know, we have girls that are going through the carpentry program. Our aquaculture program is... I will just give you an anecdotal because I didn't count, but it looked to me like it was roughly evenly split. Our brownfield program, boy, I'm trying to get a feel in my head for, I've seen them all out there at the project, and I'm gonna tell you that it's 60% male and about 40% female, but that could be wrong. Again, that's just an anecdotal observation. I'm of the opinion that BTI is probably about 60-40 male-female, but it might be 50-50. But there are absolutely no reasons for exclusion. It's just that some of our young ladies are taking the college prep track as opposed to the technical track. But we have, like I said, we have pathways that are overwhelmingly female. You know, the phlebotomy and the health sciences in general is overwhelmingly female, and culinary is very strongly female.
Thank you. Well, and my comment would be that if you have 300 students participating out of 480, you got to have a few girls in there. So.
And we are actively recruiting to get every student that has interest involved, because BTI is supposed to be good for our community. Like I said, we're an island in the desert. If we can teach them and train them here, then we're better off.
Thank you.
And Senator Roblin has another question.
I just want to say, on the brownfields program, is that learn how to all the safety regulations and what equipment to wear, and then also digging things up and moving them some other places so they get to use the heavy equipment and stuff? Do they do all those things?
Yeah, we've actually hired a company to come in and do all the safety training and do all the digging up, and we have an architect and a geologist and a chemist to make sure that all the safety regulations are handled. And one of the requirements of the RFP for the company to come in and do that work is that they have to work with kids in a practical way. And if they have somebody on their team that can't work with kids and they have to regenerate their team, that's a condition of the contract with them.
And so they aren't necessarily doing the heavy construction work, because I don't know if age-wise they can do that, but they're sitting beside, understanding what it is, and getting an understanding of what all has to be done. Is that kind of...
Yeah, it's a full-fledged internship in that sense, but there are Bully and Oregon Health standards that have to be followed. The kids have to be safe first.
Okay.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you, Walt, for calling in. I was glad I was able to see you when you were here last week. I just wanted to ask, I'm not sure if it's so much for you or kind of for everybody about this, but similar to my earlier question of Senator Edwards, is what's the kind of long-term goal for this? Is the goal to see how these work at the community level and then potentially have that be the standard operating procedure for certifying these kind of teachers, or is it to develop something that then we come back to the TSPC and say, how about this as a way? I guess that's kind of, you know, what is the long-term goal for this? To establish this is the new norm for everybody, or to show that there is an alternative to the way that it's being done and perhaps change the way that it's being done at the TSPC?
Well, locally, our long-term goal is to develop a non-core cadre of teachers that we can call on for specialized services and skill sets. I guess, you know, from a state point of view, and I'm not sure we're quite that egalitarian, we're really quite local in what we're thinking, but from a point of view of TSPC, if we can help, we would be more than glad to help. And, you know, as a pilot program making the reports, I think we will be able to help TSPC look and see what pedagogic minimums are necessary to have a certified employee in a district, especially one out in the, you know, again, island in the desert kind of idea. But what we're really looking for here is to develop a cadre of non-core teachers that will work inside of our CTE program at BTI in a vast array of opportunities. And what we're hoping is that every kid that wants to can get a three-year certificate in a technical area.
Okay.
Either of you have any comment on that?
Representative Springer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Smith-Warner, what I would add to that is I used to live in Eastern Oregon, John Day, and when you live in John Day, you go to the city to do errands, and the city is Baker, Baker City. It was Baker then. And so you have a hard time attracting some people to live in that area. You absolutely do. And you cannot pay a living wage for somebody to come in and create this whole program about in one area and number one, fund that. Number two, have enough need for that. So you have to get creative. You just have to get creative. And so how I see this bill is I bet this is something that Salem-Keizer, Portland, Eugene, probably has little to no interest in. They may at some point, and that's great. But this is really for those more rural districts that, number one, for budget reasons, and number two, just the capacity to bring somebody and pay them full time to be on staff just doesn't work. And so as we continue to look through that equity lens, this is an opportunity to bring opportunity to some of those areas. It really is. I mean, when you're talking about a school with 400, you can't offer very many things at a full-time level. You absolutely can't. So as far as long-term goal, I don't have a prescribed goal. I just want to create more opportunities for students, and I see this as a method to do that.
I'm sorry. I didn't pick up on that.
I gave a speech about rural Oregon.
Representative Springer just gave a speech about rural Oregon. And how this is particularly critical to
we're out here.
Particularly important to places like John Day and so on. Any additional questions or comments? Well, Walt, I want to apologize for you having to take a trip all the way out here on Wednesday and then finding out that the meeting had been canceled. But we appreciate you being available on the phone this morning so that we can get your direct wisdom on this program. We are not yet scheduled to hold a work session on 3166, but I will be speaking with the big co-chairs today and tomorrow, and we'll be certainly urging them to let us have that opportunity. Thank you very much, and we'll sign off at this point.
Thank you very much. You have a great day.
Thank you. Okay, that was good. Now, once again, as I said when we were off, when we were in recess, Governor Brown is scheduled to testify Thursday on House Bill 3380 and Senate Bill 213 dealing with early childhood. And so we're all looking forward to hearing from our new governor and being able to ask her questions. So we'll want to all be on time on Thursday. Anything else? Madam
Doug,
Co-Chair?
Doug's behind us. I don't know if
Doug's
he has
behind
anything.
Us.
Just for questions.
Okay.
So we look like we're going to be here every day this week.
We're going to be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, not Friday.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Anything else? All right.
Want to close the...
I will close the public hearing on 8060 and 3166, and we're adjourned. Adjourned.